Smart Speaker. We're celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org. Thanks so much to everybody who was part of our summer membership drive last week. Today's weather, partly sunny, highs 82 to 88, slight chance of thunderstorms in northwestern Minnesota, and breezy south wind up to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, good chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some could produce heavy rainfall, south wind up to 30 miles per hour and lows near 59. And tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the low to mid 70s, northwest wind 5 to 10, gusting higher. And by Wednesday, sunny, highs in the mid 70s. You can answer our question of the week. What are your favorite ways to eat wild berries? We did hear from Pizza Guy too. He said, on a recent trip to Kalamazoo, I had my first experience with mulberry trees. I held out my hat, grabbed a branch, and with a good shake, I filled my hat and then stuffed my face. Thanks for that. You can text in as well, 218-326-1234. It's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with a special edition of the Up North Report. For months, I've been exploring the impacts of incarceration, specifically the disproportionate rates among Indigenous people in northern Minnesota. Natives are the most overrepresented people in the U.S. criminal justice system. In Minnesota, Natives make up about 1% of the population, but represent more than 9% of those in the state's prisons. In our region, which includes the 6-member bands of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, plus the sovereign Red Lake Nation, these rates can be even higher. This is the second part of a series unpacking issues behind the disparities. Getting arrested and going to jail can get expensive. For those already in poverty or who find themselves ensnared in the criminal justice system, the costs of bail, representation, probation or parole, fines, commissary, and communication add up quickly. And the ripple effects only compound the issue: losses of jobs, housing, transportation, or all three. Nearly all respondents to a KAXE survey conducted this spring pointed to those losses as serious impacts of incarceration of themselves or a loved one. Almost half of the 32 respondents identified as a tribal member or a descendant. One respondent said entangling with the criminal justice system costs more than dollars. They wrote, quote, "Re-entry is harder than people think. Finding housing and jobs is a constant struggle. It created trauma that we're still working through." For those who can afford it, a criminal charge could mean shelling out thousands of dollars for a private attorney. But for most people, it means a court-appointed public defender representing them against the state.
Nobody's better off being involved in criminal justice. People who are coming into the criminal justice system, by and large, are not coming into the system because they're bad actors by themselves.
That was James Hughes, the executive director of the Regional Native Public Defense Corporation. The Cass Lake organization is one of 4 public defense nonprofits in the state and one of 2 that specifically cater to Native clients. Hughes says the disparities in the criminal justice system may be heavily influenced by perceptions about race, culture, and poverty.
When you've got the ability to differentiate a tribal member from a non-tribal member, oftentimes by the color of somebody's skin or by the license plate that's on the car they drive, it further makes them available to system actors who would prefer not to give a fair shake.
The org also provides wraparound services and supports. The holistic approach is a large part of its model, says the organization's community and outreach coordinator, Thomas Sorensen.
There's a lot of things other than just the court process that people are going through when they're going through a criminal justice system, and whether that's substance abuse, mental health, transportation in a rural community. I think it's important to look at all the issues that people are dealing with when trying to help them navigate and find a better life and stability.
The organization serves a portion of the 9th Judicial District, Beltrami, Cass, Clearwater, Itasca, and Manoman counties. Of the more than 2,500 arrests in these counties last year, the majority were for driving while intoxicated. With DWI being a common way to get caught up in the criminal justice system, Hughes says he believes many of the laws on the books create additional and unnecessary police encounters to seek out more DWI arrests.
You know, we've got law enforcement out there in some regards responding to true emergencies, but in other regards, there's police out there that are looking for encounters. They're generating encounters, and it's running the numbers up.
Despite the many challenges of their work, Sorensen and Hughes say it's rewarding. There's more collaboration and cooperation between groups for diversionary programming. Hughes says fighting for his clients to get a fair shake is what makes it all worthwhile.
I'm going to get you out of jail. You're going to go to treatment. You're going to get some mental health help. And we're going to show this court that the things you've done do not define who you are.
Read more in-depth coverage on this story and other parts of the Overrepresented Undercounted series on KAXE.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. Sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from this community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
It is 6 minutes after 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show on People Powered KAXE. You can find more on Larissa's series, Overrepresented, Undercounted, at KAXE.org. And we'll have the latest edition of the Up North Report at 5:30 today during All Things Considered. I'm Jennifer Barr. Joining me now, Sarah Bignall. Good morning.
Good morning. Our thanks goes out to the Minnesota State Fair. It's the Great Minnesota Get-Together, 12 days of food, entertainment, rides, animals, and family fun starting Thursday, August 27th through Monday, September 7th. More at mnstatefair.org. Hard to believe that it's almost that time of year already.
Coming up.
I know.
And current temperatures, we've got quite a range right now, 57 in Hibbing, up to 68 in Brainerd. It's 61 in Grand Rapids, 67 in Bagley. For today, partly sunny, highs 82 to 88. Slight chance of thunderstorms, especially in northwestern Minnesota. Breezy south wind up to 20 miles per hour. And tonight, good chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some could produce heavy rainfall with winds from the south up to 30 miles per hour and lows near 59. Coming up next, we'll have more from National Public Radio's Morning Edition, and then we'll have Events Up North, a look at what's going on throughout the region this week.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California.
And I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C. Good morning. President Trump's nominee for attorney general has finally canceled an order that got him in trouble with some senators.
Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche released a letter last night. He says he's rescinding a plan to create a $1.8 billion fund for President Trump's political allies. Two Republicans have been demanding that action in writing. They had been blocking his nomination to hold the job permanently.
NPR's Claudia Grisales has been covering the action in the U.S. Senate. Claudia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Okay, so what did the acting attorney general say in writing this time, and what's it mean for his confirmation?
Right. This order was issued just a few hours ago, and it does indeed rescind this controversial effort the administration dubbed the, quote, anti-weaponization fund. This came from a deal that was made with Trump's IRS agency under his administration. And he threatened to revive this fund just this weekend if two Republican senators, that's Senators John Cornyn of Texas and Tom Tillis of North Carolina, would not back off their objections to this fund. But there's a lot more elements to this deal that were not addressed in that order. The deal with the IRS also included a provision to protect Trump and his family from future tax audits. And that's another very controversial provision for Republicans. So while this order may address a major hurdle that has held this confirmation up on committee, there are plenty of other questions remaining.
Yeah, and here's another question. I've been reading Blanche's letter that came out overnight. It's mostly in the present tense. He says the fund, quote, is not moving forward, for example. He doesn't say this fund was bad or inappropriate. He doesn't say what he would do if his boss orders him to revive it next week. And you just said Trump still spoke in favor of it this past weekend. Are senators persuaded by any of this?
That's the big question now. This letter may address, again, those concerns for Cordon and Tillis, who were on the Judiciary Committee, but Blanche still faces a lot of concerns that are not clear, making not clear that he has enough support on the Senate floor from Republicans to get that confirmation. And as we know, Republicans are operating with tight margins, so it doesn't take much to derail a vote in that chamber. And while all the focus has been on Cordon and Tillis because of their roles on this committee, it's a new ballgame when we talk about a whole of the Senate Republican conference. And so we should also note the administration has resisted for weeks to go this far. So this is still a lingering issue for many. And it's just one of several items causing headaches between the administration, Republicans, and Congress.
What's another?
Well, a big part of this comes back to Trump's push for the Save America Act. That's a GOP bill that would require proof of citizenship and photo ID to cast a ballot. Trump has blamed Senate Majority Leader John Thune for not getting a lot of this done, even if it means getting rid of the filibuster. And this past week, Trump was asked whether he was confident in Thune, and he did not give a ringing endorsement.
How's Thune responding to that pressure?
Well, he is not exactly taking his lumps and going home. He's been consistent that the votes are not there to pass the Save America Act, and they are not going to get rid of the filibuster. Trump has wanted them to stay in for the month of August, but Thune has said that would not be productive either.
Claudia Grisales, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For a perspective on the tensions between Senate Republicans and the president, we call GOP strategist Alex Conant. He has led communications efforts for several U.S. presidential and U.S. Senate campaigns. He's now a partner at the communications consulting firm Firehouse Strategies. Alex, so Todd Blanche announced to rescind the anti-weaponization fund. What does that deal indicate to you?
I mean, it indicates to me that the White House, the administration, really wants to get him confirmed. They don't want to go into recess with him not confirmed, because I think he loses all momentum then, and the president potentially has to nominate somebody else to be the attorney general. It'd be a big political loss for the administration at this point. So I think they're trying to make a deal. They're trying to show in good faith that this weaponization fund is not going to go forward, given how vociferously Senator Cornyn has argued against it. But I don't think his nomination is a done deal yet by any means.
Why not? I know that Cornyn reached that deal with the DOJ that'll get his vote, and Tom Tillis has said he'd follow Cornyn's lead on this. So why wouldn't it be a done deal?
Well, you have to get a majority on the Senate floor. I'm not completely convinced that all the other Republican senators that aren't on the committee are going to follow his lead. But I think the next 24 hours are going to be critical as senators start waking up this morning and reading the details about this deal that Senator Cornyn struck. If we see more of them endorsing, obviously that would give them some momentum and they could get them confirmed this week.
And just to be clear, Cornyn and Tillis are both on the way out. Is that pretty much the reason why they could stand up to Trump in this way?
It certainly gives them a little bit of an incentive to do so. I mean, they're both on the way out because of President Trump. Neither of them were big Trump fans. They voted with his agenda almost 100% of the time, but Trump really didn't like them personally, argued and supported their challengers, or in Tillis' case, said he would potentially support one of his challengers in a primary. And so the reason they're not coming back is because of Trump. And now they're called the YOLO senators. You only live once, because they figure they might as well, you know, take their pound of flesh before they leave and stand up to Trump when they might not agree with him on issues like this one. But the rest of the Republican conference, having seen what happened to Cornyn and Tillis and Senator Cassidy in Louisiana as well, having seen that, they're more in line with Trump than they've ever been.
Because I was wondering if this could be considered a victory for Senate Republicans, but it sounds like maybe not really.
Not really. I mean, as the report just said, it doesn't sound like this letter has too much teeth in it. We'll see if it's enough to appease the rest of the Senate Republicans. But I think this is a pretty small issue in the grand context of things.
All right. Now, another item on this week's to-do list is the passing of late Senator Lindsey Graham's Russia sanctions bill. That's a measure to penalize anyone who buys goods like oil and natural gas from Russia. Now, some Senate Democrats say the legislation hands too much authority to the administration. Do you foresee any progress on this front?
I do, actually. Look, well over 80 senators, Republicans and Democrats, are co-sponsoring this legislation. You know, something that Russia hawks, people who think we need to be doing everything we can to support Ukraine, have been pushing for years. That's why Senator Graham was a big champion of it, and his untimely death breathed a lot of momentum into it, got the White House to endorse the bill. Yes, there are a handful of Democrats that are opposing it, which is really ironic because traditionally we've seen the divisions on Ukraine amongst the Republicans, not the Democrats, but we've seen a couple of Democrats opposing it now. But I do think just given the widespread support of this legislation, it should pass, and it should pass this week. You know, when you only have a dozen or so Democrats opposing a bill, they can't stop it. They can just slow it down. And so here you're running into an issue where you have the August recess coming up at the end of this week. The question is, are Democrats really going to drag down the rest of the agenda over this legislation, or will the big majority of senators be able to push it through? My expectation is that they'll push it through, which will be a big loss for Putin.
One more thing to ask you about, President Trump's Save America Act. That's the bill that would heighten requirements for Americans to register and vote. Any room for compromise in the GOP on that one?
Probably not. There's a lot of Republican senators that have varying degrees of concern about that piece of legislation. A lot of it having to do with federalism, and they're thinking that we should leave elections to the states. Given how long we've been fighting about this, it's basically all year now, and how hard President Trump's been pushing for it, it seems very unlikely that it'll become law.
Alex Conant is a veteran Republican strategist. Alex, thanks a lot for your thoughts on this.
Thank you.
The United States and Japan took steps together to hold up the value of Japan's currency. I've got a yen to hear from NPR's Anthony Kuhn.
Last Friday, the U.S. and Japanese governments cooperated in selling billions of U.S. dollars and buying Japanese yen. The move helped to halt the slide of the yen, which was at a nearly 40-year low to the dollar. Speaking to reporters on Air Force One, President Trump explained it this way.
Because we have a good relationship with Japan. We're very strong, very, very strong financially. They have a weakening yen, and they wanted a little bit of help.
Trump said propping up the yen helps the U.S. financially. A stronger yen makes Japanese exports less competitive and cuts Japan's trade surplus with the U.S. It also makes it less likely that Japan will sell its large holdings of U.S. Treasury bonds, which could raise the cost of borrowing for U.S. consumers. Trump added that it was an ally-like thing to do.
We're always there for Japan. Japan's been very good to us, with the exception, of course, of Pearl Harbor.
Japan's surprise attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 prompted the U.S. to declare war on Japan and enter into World War II. Jeffrey Hall, an expert on Japanese politics at Kanda University of International Studies outside Tokyo, says that many Japanese see Trump as erratic but not hostile, especially to its female prime minister, Sanae Takaichi.
She's avoided ever really criticizing him, and he has called her one of his biggest fans. And so Japanese people maybe are happy that Prime Minister Takaichi is getting some help with the currency issue because Trump is president.
Hall adds that a weak yen means Japanese consumers are getting hammered by high prices for imported food and fuel. On the other hand, Takaichi's own fiscal policies have weakened public confidence in the yen, contributing to its slide against the dollar.
Takaichi is a believer in spending more without having to pay for it with taxes. She thinks that lower taxes will make people want to spend more in the economy.
Hall says that government intervention may not address the long-term decline of the yen, but it may, in the short term at least, shore up Takaichi's sliding approval ratings. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News.
Thanks for listening to your public radio station, which brings you Morning Edition, which covers this country and the world. I'm just looking at our rundown of stories today. We're covering the wildfires in Spokane, Washington. We're covering the Lumbee Tribe of eastern North Carolina. Student borrowers have an update. We've got that story in today's program. We've even got a report from the back of your car about kids eating snacks. This community supports your public station. And this public station brings you news of your community and communities all across this country. This is NPR News.
It's It is 7:19. Thanks for listening to People Powered KAXC and the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
Good morning. It is Monday morning and the sun is shining and the air in the morning is starting to have that slight edge of a fallness to it. Just a little. Just a little.
And this morning, and last week too, it's kind of interesting when you do the morning show once a week because you can really tell the difference in the daylight week to week.
Yeah.
But this morning I definitely needed the light on in the kitchen to prepare my breakfast.
Okay.
And to kind of get ready, such I have not needed it for the last few months.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh yeah, it's getting darker.
The days are getting shorter there.
Yep.
But the weather this weekend though was perfect.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. And I'm really looking forward to tomorrow. It's going to be in the low 70s, which, is kind of my jam.
Sweater weather.
Yeah. And then Wednesday, just a little bit warmer back into the mid 70s, which also just sounds lovely. We could get some storms tonight, however, with that kind of shift from the 80s into the 70s.
Yeah. Rain good. I don't know. Like if the when you get the high winds and that makes me nervous.
Yeah, but. And this is saying some heavy rainfall and our winds up to 30 miles per hour. So hopefully that won't be too damaging.
Yeah, but I think we can still use the rain. It's been so dry this summer that it'd be nice to help fill the void, if you will.
Yeah, we got a bit on Friday morning, but.
Yeah, that was a nice like kind of steady rainfall that we had. And felt good. The grass is a little less crunchy. But the mowing, I don't know, like haven't mowed our lawn in like 2 weeks, but it hasn't grown that much.
Yeah. My lawn is very patchy. Some areas I think probably where it's shadier are kind of long and lush. And then parts of it, like you would never need to mow because it's just dry and parts of it are dead. And
I don't know. And this is the time of year, like just like the flower beds and all that. It's like, oh, it's so much work. I don't know. Love this time of year, though, that kind of as we transition out of summer towards more fall-like things. I would agree with you with the kind of cooler days. Although I would like some warmer days that we can spend on the lake. But
yeah, they'll probably still come.
Yeah, that's good. There we are. So coming up in a little bit, we'll have events up north. But before we get to that, we'd like to thank Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic GigaZone internet speeds up to 10 gig. And customer service. Learn more at paulbunyan.net.
Sarah, our question of the week is about wild berries. How do you like to eat them? And we did hear from Pizza Guy, too, who mentioned mulberry trees in Michigan, how good those were. I don't think I've ever had a mulberry.
No, I don't know that I have either. Although I feel like when we lived in Wisconsin, we had a mulberry tree.
Hmm.
But I don't recall doing anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So we have like wild raspberries that grow around our house that we can pick, and those are tasty.
I like to eat them plain, but they're really my favorite thing to do with them is put them on ice cream.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. We're not really an ice cream family. I think people are either ice cream families or they're not. And we're just not really that. We're not really a baked good either. Like if we're to consume it, it would be with yogurt.
Oh, yeah.
It would be more of a breakfast thing.
Mm-hmm.
I spent some time with my cousin this past weekend, and she had just came from a blueberry patch.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had fresh blueberries. So those were delicious by the handful.
Yeah.
And we made some blueberry pancakes on Sunday morning, and those were tasty as well.
Yeah, that would be my way of eating blueberries. My choice way of eating blueberries is in either pancakes or muffins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely like that. And our daughter brought home a blueberry pie from this bakery down in Minneapolis, but it was like the tiny blueberries.
Yeah,
you know,
really wild ones.
The really wild ones was probably one of the best pies I've ever had. It was just like the blueberries. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what like blueberries taste like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But the more store-bought ones just aren't the same as those natural ones. But I don't know. This is a fun time of year with just all the vegetables and fruit that are, you know,
yeah,
like locally freshly grown, and I don't know, you kind of forget what food tastes like. My mom came over with some large like of those like heirloom tomatoes, and they're so good.
Yeah,
they're so good. I don't know, love this time of year.
Yeah, it's a great time of year. So you can text us about your favorite ways to eat berries or maybe what's been growing in your garden. Text 218-326-1234. It is time for Events Up North. It's a closer look at some of the events happening across northern Minnesota this week.
We have 4 county fairs happening this week. The Crow Wing County Fair runs Tuesday through Saturday in Brainerd, and Wednesday through Sunday, it's the Clearwater County Fair in Bagley and St. Louis County's Fair in Chisholm, and the Couchiching County Fair is Friday through Sunday in Northome.
And Hello Range presents New Neighbor Connect the first Thursday of every month at 5 p.m. at Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm. So that's this Thursday. And this month, they will have Nerd Trivia with Range FanCon at 6 o'clock.
Happy Dancing Turtle has an open house at Hunt Utilities Group Resilient Living Campus in Pine River this Thursday from 5:30 to 7. You can visit with staff and see their outdoor classrooms, garden, and shop featuring hydronic systems and more.
And you can join the Wabana Chain of Lakes Association for its inaugural fundraising benefit concert. That's this Friday at Cedar Creek Tavern on Highway 38, north of Grand Rapids. Picnic dinner from 4 to 6:30, followed by live music and dancing with Odessa and the Beat. They also have door prizes and merch that is open to all tickets at wcola.org/shop.
Watermark Arts Center in Bemidji hosts Works by Monica Erke beginning this Friday, August 7th, with the reception from 5 to 7. Erke's exhibit studies the invasive plants of Minnesota in a series of lino cut prints. Erke will give a demonstration of her work on Saturday, August 8th at 10 a.m.
And the 6th Annual Range Iron Pride Festival is this Saturday from 11 to 4 at Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia. It includes vendors, food trucks, and entertainment.
The 42nd Annual Threshing and Antique Show at the Blackberry Farm is August 8th through the 9th from 9 until 4 with live music, antique tractors, shingle making, barrel making, as well as farm animals and steam tractors.
And I believe some folks from the antique or Blackberry Farm are coming in Thursday morning, I believe, to tell us more about that. And the Green Cheese Picnic is this Saturday, August 8th. It's in KAXE's backyard in Grand Rapids. Bring a dish to share, your favorite beverage, and your own chair. Fun starts at 5 o'clock with the potluck dinner and then green cheese trivia from 7 to 9. You are welcome to bring your own trivia questions and answers, too. And at the end of the evening, we'll crown a new king and queen of green cheese.
Hard to believe it's cheese season already,
cheese
too.
Cheese picnic again.
It's
and
back.
I believe our current king and queen of green cheese are going to be on the Wednesday morning show this week to kind of talk about their reign. And and I don't know if they're going to give any clues to who they might pick as the new king and queen.
The Buck Lake Improvement Club has their monthly brunch buffet Sunday, August 9th from 9 to noon at their community center located 12 miles north of Nashwalk on Highway 65.
Events Up North is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. If you have events to share with our listeners, send us an email, psa@kaxe.org, and you can find Events Up North at our website every week. Coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, I am your host for Headwaters.
So what's the question? What's your request line?
Request line is songs that say thank you. As we we're wrapping up our summer membership drive, thank you to everybody who was part of that, and thanks to all of our members. So songs that have something to do with saying thanks, and you can text in those suggestions, 218-326-1234. Mm-hmm.
First song that pops to my mind is Alanis Morissette, have that one song with that thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That would be my request line.
Okay.
Suggestion. Our thanks goes out to Hibbing Chrysler Center, serving northern Minnesota, carrying Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles with staff available to assist on the Beltline in Hibbing or at HibbingChrysler.us.
Right now, we're going to listen to our album of the week, kicking it off on this Monday morning. The album's called Pass the Veil by Shannon Lay. Lay is a California singer-songwriter. This is her 5th studio album, and it's a seamless blend of folk melodies, jazz instrumentation, and synthesizer flourishes. Leigh is a second-generation Irish-American, and her singing style draws from Celtic and British Isles folk music. And you can let us know what you think. Text 218-326-1234. The song we're going to hear from Shannon Leigh this morning called What Does It Mean? From our album of the week, that is Shannon Lay, the album called Past the Veil, and that song called What Does It Mean? We'll be hearing lots more of it throughout the week here on KAXE, and you'll be able to read more about it later today at KAXE.org. I liked it.
Yeah, it was, that's a nice song, I think, to put on and, you know, as you're kind of bebopping around your house doing things, you know, just kind of nice to jam along to.
Yeah.
I could see Driving too. It would be a pleasant like driving album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so excited to hear more from that.
Yeah. Support for KAXE comes from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
We also receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleraine.bank.com. Member FDIC.
Temperatures right now in the 60s for most of the region, 59 right now in Hibbing, 62 in Grand Rapids, and then we are all the way up to 69 in Aiken, Bemidji, and Brainerd right now. For today, we can expect highs 82 to 88, slight chance of thunderstorms in northwestern Minnesota and breezy south wind up to 20 miles per hour. Good chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Some could produce heavy rainfall, and our lows near 59. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and cooler with highs in the low to mid-70s. And by Wednesday, sunny, highs in the mid-70s. It is time now for best wishes. We're going to do our best to wish friends and neighbors happy birthday, happy anniversary, starting with yesterday, August 2nd.
I'll let you take that this day because you know what name I'm going to struggle bus with. So,
okay. Stanley Raber, happy 69th birthday to you in Grand Rapids. Angela Nisler turned... or had a birthday yesterday in Bemidji, age undisclosed. And Louis Petrozewski, happy 19th to you yesterday in Shevlin.
And we have one anniversary for today for Rick and Tammy Ingemels, their 19th anniversary, and they're celebrating that in Bagley. Robert Jevney celebrating a birthday today from Jacobson. Callie Jansen is celebrating her 25th birthday today. And Carmen Anderson turns 56 today in Asheville, North Carolina.
Our best wishes to you all. If you have birthday or anniversary greetings to share, you can always text those in 218-326-1234. And we've gotten a few request line texts in for
the thank you
songs about thank you. Brandon Chase's Gigita, whoever you are. And Lisa said, Andrew Gold, thank you for being a friend.
Yeah.
And she says, thanks, friends. Yeah, that one definitely was on my radar to play mm-hmm. the Golden Girls theme.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, stay tuned for Headwaters. That starts at 9, and our request line will start at 10:30. And right now we're going to play a song for all of you, especially our birthday and anniversary kids. This is Pertner Sandstone in their cover of Can't Hardly Wait. Minnesota band Pertineers Sandstone covering another Minnesota band, The Replacements, with Can't Hardly Wait.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I like the incorporation of horns with like banjo.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good combo.
Yeah, I guess I don't know that I often hear that. So.
Right.
Yeah, that was good. There you go. Well, can't wait to hear more from that album as well.
Yeah. This is the Monday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
Did you know that we have some DJ training coming up, Jennifer?
I did know that.
Yeah, our volunteers are very important to our overall sound here at KAXE, and I think what makes us sound unique. You know, we have very interesting and differing music shows because it's a person, real life person, that is choosing music. And if you've been like, hey, you know what, I love music so much, and you wanna join our group of volunteers, we do have a training coming up on Monday, August 24th. Happening at the KEXE studios in Grand Rapids. That'll go from 6 until 7:30, and you can volunteer or email volunteer at kexe.org with any questions or to confirm attendance. And if you go through the training and you're like, ooh, no, that isn't what I want to do, you're not obligated to. It's mm-hmm. a good opportunity just to kind of learn a little bit more about what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I love our volunteers. It's just... so fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And as we've been saying, our music has been handpicked since 1976. Mm-hmm. And you can be one of those people who's handpicking the music.
Yeah.
And putting together a show. It's a lot of fun.
What I love is the ones that you learn have very similar musical tastes to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dave Blumstrand and I are like music twins of like his playlist are like, oh man, like such good music.
Yeah. And then, but also discovering things you wouldn't have heard mm-hmm. that are like, this is right in line with what I love too.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
It's fun. So if you love music, love putting together playlists and that, and we're always looking for more volunteers to add to our mix.
Yeah. Again, that training, it's just 3 weeks from today, August 24th.
Don't say that, Jennifer. I don't know how that's possible.
So August flies.
It does. Yeah. Like June didn't seem as fast. July, I swear, was like a week long, and mm-hmm. then it was over, and I don't know, like August, I think, will go by in a flash.
Yep.
I don't know. It's busy. You know, summertime's just, you know, busy. You're doing stuff. And I do like fall. It seems like you get into more of a routine, but mm-hmm. I don't have kids in school anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of helped, like, that mm-hmm. routineness.
Yep.
Now I'm just freewheeling, you know. So have you been reading any books lately?
Yes. Trying to remember the book I read a book by Ellen Baker called Keeping the House. And I mentioned it to Heidi. And she's like, oh, yeah, I interviewed her years ago about that book.
Okay.
I had found it at a book sale recently. And that was an intergenerational saga.
Oh.
With varying storylines that kind of bounced all over the place, which took me a little bit to get used to it. But once I got into it, I really liked it.
Okay.
About a family in Wisconsin, and starts off kind of like logging titans and then just business titans, and people are going to war, World War I, World War II, all represented, and lots of stuff happening.
So you recommend it?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Okay.
And then now I'm reading a book by Leanne Moriarty, and it's called Truly Madly Guilty. And I don't know if it's like it's building up to something. These people have been to a barbecue, and it keeps flashing back to the day of the barbecue and then afterwards. And something has gone horribly wrong, but you don't know what.
What happened?
And so you're trying to piece it together.
A lot of her books are like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Was kind of, they made a Netflix series out of it. And
okay.
I was like, well, I'll read the book before I watch the series. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I had read a book by her called Here One Moment earlier this year, which is about she's a woman's on a plane.
Yes.
And she keeps telling people how they're going to
die. Yeah. Like whatever age. And then like, yeah, this is how,
like age of death, cause of death.
But yes.
Like, she's just like in this trance of telling people. And yeah, then it follows up on all these people of like what is actually happening, how this affects them. Some people are really freaked out by it.
Yep.
Trying to change things.
Yes. I did like that book. I thought that mm-hmm. was pretty good.
And I liked it because it really told more of the backstory of the woman as you, like, it kept flashing back to her kind
yep.
of backstory too, which was very interesting. So,
yep. So I am almost done with This Story Might Save Your Life, which is a huge book. Tiffany Crum, I believe, is the author, and this is a debut novel of hers, and it is podcasters who have a podcast that tell, like, survival stories, and there's, like, a mystery in it. I don't know. It's kind of a rom-com-y sort of, like, typical romance, but it's also kind of wrapped around, like, a mystery, mm-hmm. and the interwebs are either really loving it, or the, like, thriller people are like, this is not that. There's too much lovey stuff in it. And I think for the romance crowd, they're like, there's too much of a mystery in there. We just want a straightforward romance novel. I really enjoyed it. It's been interesting because it flips between two characters in there. And I don't know. It's been an interesting way to kind of tell, like, the events that are happening.
Yeah.
So if I was not here, I would be finishing that book this morning. And then I had finished a couple weeks ago Ann Patchett's new book, Whistler, and I loved it so much. And Ann Patchett, for me, has been a little hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Lake, I did not like.
Okay.
I was not a fan of that book. But Whistler was a book about a woman who ends up running into her, like, stepfather, like, that had been her stepfather when she was young.
Mm-hmm.
And they put together they build a relationship back, and there were some events that had happened when she was young, and in her child memory, like, she had kind of filled in some pieces inaccurately just because she was so young. It was a lovely kind of reforming relationships and kind of framing how kind of traumatic events in your life, how, especially as a child, how you can kind of look at that. I don't know. I found it so delightful. That was one of my, like, 5-star reads of the year. I really, really liked it.
Good. What was that one called?
Whistler.
Okay. That was the Ann Patchett.
Ann Patchett.
All right. We will have a new edition of What We're Reading next week at this time. And you can always let us know what you've been reading. You can either text in 218-326-1234 or check out our What We're Reading Facebook page.
It looks like we got another request line for you here with Chris Cornell, the Led Zeppelin cover of Thank You,
mm-hmm.
or My Morning Jacket, Thank You Too. So Dave just texts that in.
Yeah, and the Thanks I Get by Wilco. So the request line coming up at 10:30, songs that say thank you in some way, shape, or form. Text in 218-326-1234. I'll be your host for Headwaters. Right now it is time for our daily dose of phenology, the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Here is John Latimer.
On today's date, August 3rd, 2010, my son Martin and I come across a patch of running club moss. Running club moss is a relative of the princess pine. They are both lycopodium. The lycopodiums put up a structure called a sporophyte, and that sporophyte has a fine powdery spores that are going to be the next generation of club moss if they're allowed to spread. But the amazing thing about these spores is that when they are ripe and dry, if they can be aerosolized, if they can be put into the air as a puff of yellow smoke, really, and ignited at that moment, they are explosive. It was this powder which was the basis for flash photography in the early days of photography. The photographer would collect this spore and then elevate it with his little rack and ignite it at the same time, and it would flash quite brightly. My son Martin and I actually did this as an experiment, and it did, in fact, flash quite brightly.
That's our daily phenology. You can tune in tomorrow morning at 7:20 for John Latimer's latest observations. Plus, we'll hear some student phenology reports starting at about 6:45. We've been hearing from some of our nature schools and summer camps and things like that. It's always fun to hear from our listeners, and everybody's a student of phenology, so you can text in to 218-326-1234 if you've seen anything interesting or have any questions for John Latimer.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time outside this summer, but this weekend there have been the ducks are on, like, they're joining up. Mm-hmm. I don't know, at our cabin, there's 18 ducks, but there's two obvious, like, adults.
Okay.
And then the rest are kind of younger, but the younger ones now are getting to where they're both the size of, like, the adults. And so that's kind of been fun. Like, every time you see them, it's like, oh man, they're getting larger. And then there was a loon on the lake on Saturday, but it was a, like, very fuzzy, fluffy, like, baby, but it was, that was also kind of bigger too. I don't know. That was fun. Lots of monarchs on the milkweed.
Oh yeah. Good.
Yeah. So I was like, that's nice to see. We have some, like, bee balm that we have planted in our garden, and the bees were all abuzz on there. So that was also nice. It feels like last summer we weren't seeing much for, like, pollinators out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, there they are.
Yeah.
Buzzing around. So that was fun.
Good.
Yeah. We also saw a snapping turtle in the lake. We had, had goggles on.
Like, swimming in
the lake? Yeah, it was like in the bottom, like, walking through, and it was like, oh man, there's a snapper.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you kind of question, should I be dangling my toes in the water?
Yeah.
But that was fun, just to I haven't seen that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots going on in the world of nature. I can see outside our window, we've got lots of bee balm. Looks like some black-eyed Susans in our rain garden down near the Mississippi River.
Yeah. So let us know. And I can see bees buzzing around on the bee balm out there too.
Wow. Good eyes.
Yeah.
That's a little ways away.
It's a little ways away. Yeah. I just went to the eye doctor, so they upgraded the old prescription there. Can see for miles.
Sounds good.
Let us know what you have. If you have any interesting nature observations, John Latimer likes to, you know, I collect all those notes, and kind of, we can, especially as we look at the area, you know, that's, you know, the Brainerd Lakes area tend to be a little ahead of us. And we have even people from the Twin Cities that are letting us know what's happening. And I think we'll start having, it's as spring comes, it travels, you know, from south up to north. And now I think that things will be seeing things first as stuff starts changing up here.
True.
And as it gradually makes its way.
South.
Yeah. There we are, that time of year.
Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll have more from Morning Edition and the Up North Report. And then at 9 o'clock, it's Headwaters. As mentioned, I'll be your host, and you can text in your song suggestions that say thank you, 218-326-1234. Support comes from Watermark Art Center in Bemidji, featuring rotating exhibits, including indigenous and regional artwork, plus classes and a retail gallery. The center is accessible and open to all. More at watermarkartcenter.org.
We also receive support from Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape in Minnesota, offering memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. Information at mndeerhunters.com.
Coming up from National Public Radio, we're going to hear a story about firefighters who have died fighting wildfires this past year, and it's been raising questions about how stretched firefighting resources are in a season that is expected to be both long and severe.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Dozens of wildfires are burning parts of the West. We've been talking about Spokane, where tens of thousands of people have had to evacuate. In fact, Washington State declared a statewide emergency. And firefighters are mourning five of their own. Here's Murphy Woodhouse of the Mountain West News Bureau.
Friends, family, and colleagues gathered in early July to remember three Wildland firefighters. They were part of a Colorado helitack crew. Those specialized teams respond in helicopters, often rappelling to the fire line. The firefighters were quickly overtaken by a wildfire burning through a rugged stretch of the Colorado-Utah border.
Today we honor Emily Barker, Nick Hutcherson, Sydney Watson.
That's Paul Hone. He's the U.S. Wildland Fire Service Chief for the agency's Rocky Mountain region.
I ask us all to also hold in our hearts the two firefighters who were injured.
Nathan Matthews, one of the injured, died July 24th. Over the last month, helicopter pilot Nicholas Dale was killed in Colorado, and other firefighters have been burned in Washington and California. The deaths and close calls come amid an intense season, fueled by historically low snowpacks and a record-shattering spring heat wave worsened by human-caused climate change.
It was almost kind of like I knew this was going to happen.
Andy Jones is on a U.S. Forest Service helitack crew based in northern Utah. The extreme conditions and early-season fire behavior fed his premonition. As news of the June death spread, friends reached out to Jones.
It was a huge gut punch because, like, yeah, the fire world is small, but then, like, the aviation community is, like, an even smaller microcosm of that.
The deaths also hit longtime fire veteran Reva Duncan hard.
Everybody's been on edge about this fire season.
She's now president of the advocacy group Grassroots Wild and Firefighters. Beyond extreme weather, she says there are also big, distracting changes, including the creation of the U.S. Wild and Fire Service. The new fire service is under the Interior Department, while the Forest Service is part of the Department of Agriculture. Both parent agencies gave direction to quickly put out all blazes this season. Interior went further, saying that the default should be working right on the edge of fires to halt them, known as direct attack. That bothered Duncan because direct attack can be dangerous in extreme fire conditions.
That is a level of micromanagement that is really concerning.
Fire Service Chief Brian Fennessy wrote in an email to NPR that there is no top-down pressure to fight fire a certain way. He says on-the-ground incident commanders are trusted to choose the best approach. Fennessy also defended direct attack as an effective way to minimize risks to firefighters and communities. An initial investigation report on the fatal Colorado burnover describes explosive conditions, winds over 50 miles per hour, and bone-dry fuel primed to ignite. Former USDA fire scientist Dave Calkin says what happened in late June is troubling.
The thing that really hurt me the most was the apparent lack of values that they were protecting and the reality of how risky that environment is.
Chief Fennessy pushed back, noting that the fires were near the Colorado cities of Fruta and Grand Junction. Hundreds of campers and boaters evacuated, and hundreds of firefighters were deployed. Fennessy says those consequences could have been far worse with a less aggressive initial response. For Andy Jones with the Utah Hell Attack crew, he's focused on keeping his people safe as fire activity increases across the country.
I'm not going to risk getting somebody killed just so we can say that, oh yeah, we saved a few trees. Cool.
But there are still many weeks of fire to make it through.
You think things are bad now?
Just wait, he says. It could get worse this month. For NPR News, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez.
I'm Jennifer Barr.
I'm Sarah Begnall.
Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show on KAXE. Got another hour ahead of the morning show with more news from National Public Radio and the Up North Report at 8:30. You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We operate Translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. We thank you for your support.
Partly sunny today with highs anywhere from 82 to 88. Slight chance of thunderstorms in northwest Minnesota. Breezy south winds up to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, a good chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some could produce some heavy rainfall with south winds up to 30 miles per hour. Lows near 59.
Itasca Waters continues their Practical Water Wisdom webinar series this Thursday at noon. This month, Austin Steer.